Lake Effect brings you conversations about what's happening in Milwaukee and the people, places, and organizations that shape our community. This is Lake Effect Spotlight from WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR.
WUWM is celebrating 60 years on the air, and we're recognizing it in a variety of ways. One of those is an upcoming hour-long special, Rock and Roll Poet, a Reitman retrospective. It honors legendary Milwaukee radio personality and our now retired co-worker, Bob Reitman. Reitman actually started his radio career in 1966 at WUWM, and he finished it here in April of 2024. During the time in between, he was a formative figure in Milwaukee's counterculture scene and the city's early rock radio stations. He also co-hosted one of Milwaukee's top-rated morning shows, Reitman and Mueller, for 24 years. The upcoming special will dive into his radio career, how he was introduced to his favorite musician, Bob Dylan, and share the first poem he ever wrote. For today, we wanted to give you a preview of the special, starting with a conversation between Reitman and WUWM's Lori Jones.
All right, so first of all, I want to thank you for joining me today to celebrate the 60th birthday of WUWM. And then, of course, we're going to talk about your almost 60 years on Milwaukee airwaves. But I want to start at the beginning. Did you grow up in Milwaukee?
Basically, yeah.
Okay.
Born in Oklahoma.
Uh-huh.
My dad was an FBI agent. They'd moved him around. But I was here by the time I was pretty young, 5, 6, something like that.
Okay. Yep. So this is home for you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I know you've got a brother, but do you have other siblings?
I do. My brother's name is Bill,
mm-hmm.
and my sister's name is Joellen,
mm-hmm.
and they're still around. I'm the old one in the family. We had great parents and no complaints growing up in Whitefish Bay. It was Ozzie and Harriet all the way. It was idyllic.
Yeah. So what did you want to be as a kid when you were growing up?
I really didn't know, but I did realize one thing when I was about probably 11 or so. You know, you go to school and then you got all summer
mm-hmm.
to play. And I thought, you know, I got to find a job that's just like having summer vacation. And that's, I found it.
And what was that?
Radio. I didn't.
At 11?
No.
Oh.
Just I needed a job.
Okay.
That would give me that joy.
Okay.
You know, if you're not, I mean, I never really worked.
Mm-hmm.
Worked at. I just had fun.
Right.
Yep.
Right. So you must have listened to the radio then a lot growing up as a kid or not.
Yeah. I mean, back then, there was no top 40 radio. Mm-hmm. I heard the Weavers, which was interesting. Good Night, Irene. I remember us jumping around to that or listening to it.
Mm-hmm.
But then the top 40 came in. That was our only choice. And
mm-hmm.
some of the guys who were on the radio had to transition from, I don't know, easy listening music to rock and roll. And they did okay, you know. And there were some good guys on the radio, too. Charlie Hanson and
mm-hmm.
Shaky. I thought they were two different people. That's how good he was. And Rocky Fox, Pat Shanahan, who was really great. He just passed away. And he was my program director at one of the stations.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a very interesting guy. And I don't know, other guys on the radio like Bad Mad Michaels and Seamus O'Hara and all those, that's who we listened to back then.
Right. And those sort of were your inspirations.
Well, I liked the music. When they were DJing, they did a good job. Some of them were funny. Some were clever. They just entertained us.
Right, right. So you went to Marquette. You got a degree in English.
Mm.
Were your plans afterwards to work in radio?
No. I was managing a cemetery. Very responsible job. I had over 40,000 people under me. Thank you. But my godfather owned a cemetery, and I worked out there when I was in the summers when I was in high school, made enough money to pay the tuition at Marquette, by the way, which was $325 a semester.
Wow.
I know, because it's ridiculous now.
Right.
But that was how much it was then, so I could earn the money for college and worked in the cemetery and it was a job, but then all sorts of things started happening in the mid-60s. Follow that dream, you know.
Well, okay, so that was a great transition for me. Thank you, because I wanted to talk to you about Kaleidoscope.
Okay.
Which was and correct me if I'm wrong, but it was like an underground newspaper, right, that you helped found in 67 or so, and it ran to about 71.
Okay.
What type of topics did you cover, and what was its purpose?
Well, my best friend, John Coyce, was the editor, and he'd been out to the West Coast right at the right time, and he saw things happening, like the news, underground newspapers and the radio and stuff like that. And he, basically, the way I saw Kaleidoscope is when we started, John Solly, who is a good friend of mine, and Coyce and I were involved. I was a poetry editor. John Solly was basically the graphics editor. I mean, if you look at those old Kaleidoscopes, great graphics. And Coyce was the editor. But I think the philosophy was, well, whoever comes through the door and has an agenda, we'll put them on. And it went from a pretty much of a idyllic kind of flower child kind of thing into pretty radical politics over that span of time. Because the people doing the radical, whatever you want to call it, politics, they were the ones that were pumped up to do something. And they got a voice in the paper. It was a great run, you know.
What did you enjoy most about working on the Kaleidoscope?
Being the poetry editor, all I had to do was look at poetry and say, decide, well, this should go in or this shouldn't. And then this guy named Jim Sorcett came along, and I read his poetry, and I thought, what am I? This guy should do it. And so I abdicated, and he became the poetry editor, really a good poet. And at that point, Coyce and I were and still our best friends. He decided to go. We were doing radio here at this station, and he decided to devote time to the paper, and I said, oh, I get to do the radio. You know, and it just worked out well.
So, again, a great transition. Thank you for setting me up, Reitman, for this. So the station is celebrating 60 years.
Yep.
It signed on in 1964, September of 1964. You hit the airwaves in 1966, according to research that I've done here at WUWM. How did you end up at UWM-Milwaukee, the university? Were you there as a student?
No.
Oh.
Eventually, I was a student. But at that point, we were asking Dr. Ruane Hill, I was doing a poetry show at WUWM called Sense Wave.
Right.
And Coyce and I decided to ask Dr. Hill, could we have an hour, a couple hours on Sunday nights? And you know what he said? Yeah, just like that. It was amazing. And years later, not that long ago, he just passed away.
Yep.
He was 99.
Yep.
And I don't know if I ever met a sharper person at any age. It was like, we'd have an hour conversation, and 98%, I just listened to him.
Yeah.
But we came in here and asked him if we could do the show, and he right away said yes. And when I talked to him the last time we met, I asked him, how come he said yes so quickly? And he said, well, my kids were always on my case to play, have rock and roll on the station. So he followed what they told him to do, which is pretty neat.
Smart man, right?
Yep.
So before we started, we were talking a little bit about what WUWM was like in those early days. It was in the basement of a building at the university. What else do you remember about those early days?
Well, in the early days, there was an engineer behind the glass. He put up the records. We just told him what to play. And I remember one guy, I mean, there were our records, you know?
Yeah.
And here he is picking up my record. He was eating fried chicken, and he smeared it all over the record. I think he's a doctor now somewhere, but he did all that work. And when they told us that we had to do the running the board and everything, I'm not sure that was, that might have been the next step where we went out to a ZMF. But this guy, whoever it was, the engineer, he'd run everything, and we just sit back and relax. It was like listening to another radio station or something. But that ended.
That ended? Why did that end?
Well, the first job we got was at ZMF because WUWM got ratings. And the reason wasn't that we were that incredibly good. It was that there was a huge audience to hear the Grateful Dead, Dylan, the Stones, Pink Floyd, all that stuff. Nobody was playing it. And this audience, the people that listened to that, they loved it.
They were hungry for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So were we. And so it was a privilege to play that music for them. And when I went, and we got ratings. So all of a sudden, this small little station comes up, and they asked to meet with us. And they asked me if I wanted to do a show five or six nights a week for $150. I would have done it for 50. I was so happy that they asked me to do that. And that's when I had to run my own board. And I thought, this is it. I won't be able to do this, which is ridiculous. It was fun.
Right, right. Yes, it is fun. I agree with you. I'm going to take just a moment to reintroduce you. If you're just joining us, I'm WUWM's Lori Jones, speaking with Bob Reitman, the retired host of It's All Right, Ma, It's Only Music. He's here to share his memories of working at the station in honor of our 60th birthday. So, Reitman, after you left WUWM, you went on to have a successful career, whether you believe it or not, in rock radio and then at WKTI. But I want to talk about when you came back to WUWM in January of 2007. How did that happen? How did that all come together?
Honest to God, it's a great story. I had retired at 65 from KTI, and I thought to myself, maybe I'll go down to UWM and ask them if I can do a show. A few months. And we got a call. I got a call from Bruce Winter and Dave Edwards. Mm-hmm. And I came in here, and they sat me down, and they said, would you like to do an hour a week? Something like that. And I said, yeah, I'd do that. Whatever you want. I mean, I couldn't believe it. And that happened. It was fortuitous. And Bruce Winter dearly loved him. Mm-hmm. We were really close. And Dave Edwards, he was a perfect general manager. I mean, my experience at this station, and I'm not saying this because we're on that radio station now, but it was sort of the way I thought radio should be. Lots of times, I think over the years, I had one station where I had a top 40 DJ become our program director. And when he let me go, he said, it's with great pleasure I hand you your license. We used to have a license.
I remember I had one.
Did you?
Yeah.
Yep, we just have a license. And different ZMF and all the ones that followed were always an adventure. Mm-hmm. And I think the secret to it was hiring people who loved music. And when I was a program director, which is weird, but I only hired people who loved music. And Ron Kuzner, who was my boss here, the program director, I got to be his boss, which meant I didn't bother him at all. And he was, to this day, people talk about how good he was. Mm-hmm. But that was at TOS. Mm-hmm. And so hiring music freaks was what I did. And, you have to have some kind of a feeling about talking into a microphone, and they did, and everybody did a pretty good job. It didn't last real long, but it was fun.
Yeah. So when Bruce and Dave reached out to you to ask you to come back to the station, I mean, were there any non-negotiables for you, or did you just jump at it right away, or did you say, I'll come if I can do X, Y, Z?
No, there was no if.
Okay.
I mean, I asked him some questions. Mm-hmm. I said, what if I want to play three songs in a row? Well, you can do that. What if it's five songs? You can do that. Everything I asked, I said, you could do that. It was like a free ride. It was a disc jockey's dream, really. Yeah, right. And sometimes we'd play, because my son was with mm-hmm. me for a number of years, Bobby, and we did shows, and sometimes we'd do 25, 30 minutes of music. So what? I remember one guy called out. He had to drive for about an hour that night that we were on the air, and he loved it because just crank the radio and I didn't talk as much.
Right.
And then that wasn't the point. We weren't there to talk. We were there to play music.
Gotcha.
And it was fun.
And no commercials.
No commercials. Yeah.
So you mentioned Bobby. He was a co-host with you for many years on It's All Right, Ma, when you came back to WUWM for the second time. And then in these past few years, your grandson, Bert, would also sit in on occasion. So what did it mean for you to have them join you?
Well, interesting thing is we all had the same first.
Yeah, I know. You're Robert Jr. and Bobby's Robert the Third, right?
And the second.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You're second. Yeah. Now you're the second.
My mom would not let them put a junior.
Oh, okay. Okay. So you're always the second.
Yep. And Bobby was a third.
Yep.
And Bert is short for Robert.
Right.
So we don't get too confused. And he's the fourth.
Yep.
And he's 10 years old. It was tricky putting him on the air, but he just took to it. And I'm sure some people liked it and some people didn't, but I liked it.
I loved it.
Good. Thank you.
He was fun to listen to.
He was. It was spontaneous. No fear of being on the air.
Right.
Which is unusual since I was terrified every time I started. But Bobby did a good job, too.
Yeah. Were you the one who picked most? No, well, no. He got to pick a song every once in a while, right? Bobby did.
Bobby, yeah, he got a little segment that he did. And basically what he chose to do was either play stuff that he really liked or that was new.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I was the guy who played a lot of older stuff, but I played new stuff, too. So it was fun.
Yeah. What was the last It's All Right, Ma show like?
Well, I really worked on that one because I wanted that to be a really good show. A really, really good show. And I spent some time on it. A lot of times it was just spontaneous in there. But this one I worked on and I got the message across that I wanted to get across. And I would say it was 95% what I wanted.
What was that message?
It was just a mix of music that made some sense. Putting a show like we did together is it's like putting words into a poem. Each song was like a word in a poem. There was always a theme of one sort or another. It could be about rivers or it could be about broken hearts. There's never a lack of inspiration. Mm. And I just wanted to do a show at the end that just sort of was something that I wanted to say through music.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Are poetry and music different extensions of the same form of expression for you?
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, I loved writing poetry. I mean, it's a very personal thing. I used to read poems at the Avant-Garde,
mm-hmm.
and the first couple of weeks I was all excited. I'm going to read my stuff and see if people like it. Went down there and the guy that ran the poetry readings wasn't there. It was a big disappointment. And then the next week, it was a Monday night or whatever, I went down the next Monday night, he wasn't there again. So I asked Harold Strohmeyer, who owned the Avant-Garde at that point, I said, I'd be happy to run the poetry readings. He said, oh, yeah. I said, can I do that? And he said, yes. Just like Ruane Hill said, yes. I mean that. I'm so lucky that these guys said yes. And so I ran the poetry readings, but I formatted it slightly. Chicago poets, women poets, UWM poets, Marquette poets, open mic. You know, it was really fun to do that. And this guy came up to me. I was standing in front of the Avant-Garde one warm summer night, and he came up and he said, would you like to do Sense Waves? Well, that was being done by the same guy that wasn't showing up running the poetry readings, and he was moving out of the city.
Yeah.
So I said, radio, why don't you do it? And he said, no, I can't do it. He was a bit insecure. He said, I can't do that. And I said, well, yeah, I'll do it because it's a way to get more poetry out there.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that for a while. And then that's when we ran into Dr. Hill and said, well, I'm here now. Can we just have 3 or 4 more hours? I should have put that in at the question you asked before. But he said, yes. So we did poetry, and then we did the music show, and I think I dropped the poetry and just did the music show and got ratings. And
the rest is history,
yeah,
as they say.
Listen, I know how lucky I am. I mean, I'm not being anything but honest here. I know how lucky I was. I mean, guys like Dr. Hill and Harold, they said yes. And so the door was open.
That was WUWM's Lori Jones with Bob Reitman for a preview of the upcoming special Rock and Roll Poet, a Reitman retrospective. The full hour-long special will first air on November 28th at noon.
You can find more interviews like this one by visiting wuwm.com/lakeeffect. And while you're there, subscribe to the Lake Effect Spotlight podcast.